Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch each week. Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property finance and money management. Hello, mate.
G'day, mate. How are you going?
Very good. Hey.
I can't believe it's the third episode already.
Third episode, oh, I know. Time flies when you get to your age, mate.
Australia Day next week. Goodness me.
I know. And we've just had a terrific summer series.
We have.
We sort of
rebooted some of our best guests.
Some of those, for the first 100 episodes, we got some of the best gold for those folks. So we hope that people
And you'd be surprised, mate. I actually, you know, I listened.
Did
I
you?
I went back and had a listen.
Did you?
Well, these people are the gurus.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I did. I had a look. Listen.
I'm impressed, mate. There you go. Turned over a new leaf. Hey, well, did we get any feedback, obviously, about whether Ben should do life hacks and everything this year? Or was that just went under the radar, didn't it?
Well, I don't think
lucky I've prepared. Lucky I've prepared. But we got a big year ahead on the couch, Ben.
We do.
So
we do.
Just a little entree with the summer series, obviously. But,
now, am I right in saying, I mean, I'm just jumping ahead because you know how much prep work I do. But I know in the next couple of weeks, our listeners will want our predictions for 2018. So stay with us on that one. We're going to bring, you know, a big guest in to look after that as well with us. So, yeah, here we go. A bit of anticipation.
Well done, mate. We do bring in some big guests on the couch and that 2018 will be no different. But, mate, let's go straight into it. Well, before we do, today is going to be a revisit of the Pillars of Mastery.
Ooh.
Episode 3, 4, 5, and 6. We did it one, but we're going to give them a bite-sized episode. Because what we do know is that some people have stumbled across the Property Couch, Ben. We like to think that they've listened to every single episode, but not everyone has.
They've got lives, but let's be honest.
Way back in
there's more important things than what we give them.
Your shirt's strobing today. You know how you can't wear it when you're on television?
Ben, sorry about that. Strobing away.
I just thought I needed my glasses, mate. Back in the archives, back in 3, 4, 5, 6, we unpacked the pillars one by one, but today we're just going to do a fly-through of the pillars, just an update and how you can apply them in 2018, Ben.
Sounds good.
So that's what we're going to do today.
The world has changed.
It has, so it needs a bit of an update. Hey, Mindset Minute theme.
Yes.
Now, over the Christmas break, I listened to Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week. Don't worry, I'm not trying to take 4 hours, Ben. It's much more just on the property couch alone. But he's got some brilliant stuff on that. He talked about being effective versus being efficient. And I thought, got to let the listeners know about that because this is actually a very good foundation for them as they go through their 2018. So effectiveness is doing the things that get you closer to your goals. Being efficient is performing a given task, whether it's important or not, in the most economical manner possible. So being efficient without regard to the effectiveness is the default mode of the universe. I'll say that again, Ben.
Being
efficient
yes.
without regard to the effectiveness is the default mode of the universe. I always remember when you're sitting on stage and you're sitting there in a rocking chair, right? And imagine you had 1,000 people and they watched you rock in that chair all day. The thing is that you would be doing something all day, but you'd be going nowhere. You'd be confusing activity with accomplishment. So the same thing with being effective versus being efficient. So the call out for the couches this year, Ben, from me and you and Ivis, is to make sure you're being effective, not just being efficient.
Oh, I love it. So that is a great one, mate.
All right, so
one of your best.
Thank you, sir. Revisit the four pillars. So we're going to do a quick guide to mastery today, Ben. Four episodes into one.
But before, I'm going to hijack now. I'm just going to come in and just
When you bring a little segue, a little tangent in.
Well, just negative gearing. Over the past couple of weeks, been a lot of debate and a lot of social on, negative gearing. We did see Treasury through the ABC release, through Freedom of Information, that it wasn't potentially much of a big impact if negative gearing was changed. And then we've seen the RBA upload a paper from University of Melbourne talking about how they don't also think that there's going to be a big impact on property prices. Now, the paper out of, I've obviously studied both of them, the paper out of Melbourne University, that's after a long period of time where, basically the waves calm. So they still don't know what's going to happen initially, and a lot of people don't know. And in terms of, the whole debate around the assumptions for Treasury, I've got this to say, and that is, I think this whole debate is a little bit irrelevant because the assumptions that are being made as part of the predictions and the forecasts around what will happen to property prices aren't adjusted. It's almost like they've prepared it based on the status quo. Well, what we do now, the buyer behavior of what we do now. Now, the reality is with such a significant change that Labor is proposing, we've talked about this before. Go back and listen to our negative gearing podcasts and the proposed changes. We think buyer behavior will change significantly.
Yep.
We think that inner city areas will become ghettos of, you know, mass density, because the land will be worth a lot if people are going to buy. But it also means that the second-hand properties may not have that same appeal. So it's an interesting one where how do you model that? You know, how do you show the forecast of what's going to happen there? So, you know, streets will have duplexes. They'll have four on a block. There'll be 10. Everyone will be on a rush to get that better better land closer in. And I don't think, you know, most town planners and certainly most residents in that area, they don't want it in their backyard.
NIMBY.
So, yeah, not in my backyard. So it's interesting. So I'm not getting involved heavily in debating what they think. I want to have a more conscious debate around the buyer behavior. Let's explore what we think people will do. And, you know, we talked about that. We think that in the outer suburbs, we think there'll be a risk because of the secondhand market and not having the appetite out there. Inside, we think the land is going to be, you know, incredibly valuable. So if those people think that this is going to make housing more affordable closer into the city, you're dreaming, completely dreaming. That's the way in which we think buyer behavior work. We also think that businesses will start to buy the properties, because this is only for individuals, but if companies start to buy the properties, they get the negative gearing benefit. So we think people will pivot into structures that will allow them to continue to keep buying. So that's we're going to have more conversation about this. It's going to be a big topic throughout the year, but I just wanted to land on that because it's really important. And, you know, my other sort of, you know, interesting view on this, and it's a bit of an extreme view, is that what would happen if, you know, it did stop assets from appreciating, property prices appreciating? No good in grabbing a $500,000 mortgage over a 25-year period where it might cost you $1 million overall to hold that, and your property lands at $800,000, you know, in that period of time. It'll take the appetite away for people to buy. You know, you were talking just off air about what Sol Eastlake was saying. It's politically, if you think about it, it's not logical to try and get 100,000 or 200,000 people into a property market as first home buyers, because once you're in, you actually, you know, you don't want the property prices to be flat because you're paying interest on your debt. You want them to keep growing because why would you buy in? But so we've got, you know, obviously, you know, 9.7 million dwellings owned by someone. You know, they don't necessarily want it. So there's
millions. The majority of the market wants it to go up, not go down. Yeah. And so there's precedent. I mean, Paul Keating did it back in 83 and bought it back in 85. So, and then they gave depreciation concessions as well. So
now, I'm hijacking one more time. So Picker.
Well, I was going to give you the segue, mate, because if there's never been a better time to join Picker. Now we need a voice more than ever.
It's live. We are live. Please, because obviously, the money, your money, your $5 or your $20, or if you're a business, your $50 or your $200, depending on how long you want to be a member for, goes towards us being able to have that conversation, exploring what will happen around buyer behavior and helping regulate policy, being at that policy table. And we can't do that without your money. You know, we obviously need to get your support. We need to be a united voice, and then we can go and get some independent research done around that piece. So please, please stop everything. Takes you 2 minutes to register and, you know, give us your credit card details and away we go.
www.pica.asn.au, Ben.
Yep. And we've had a lot of people who also pre-registered, you know, coming soon. We haven't seen all of those people join yet either. So, you know, we're on our race to 1,000 members very quickly, and then it's 20,000, then we're going after the big one, 100,000. So let's get started.
Let's get started. So there you go, folks.
Thank you.
pica.asn.au. All right, let's kick it off.
Pillars.
Oh. Pillars. Hey, for those people who don't know what the pillars are,
yes.
A for asset selection, B is for borrowing power, C is for cash flow management, and D is for defense. So the idea behind this, Ben, is like a four-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
Take away one leg, becomes unstable and the stool falls over.
Love it.
So that's all four pillars are very, very important for building a property portfolio. So we built the podcast on these very fundamentals, and the feedback that we've been getting has been tremendous because it actually shows people, it takes a bit of mystery out of what it is. Now, within each pillar, there's a bit to understand.
Oh, there's a bit to understand.
But ultimately, the simplicity of just knowing that understanding those four pillars is the key to mastering property investment. And that's what the last 155 episodes have been about, Ben, helping people just get little nuggets along the way for those. So do you want to kick it off?
Well, we wish they'd be in the order of ABCD.
No, but they're not.
But in reality, that's just for simplicity, but it is C is normally the lead. Mm-hmm. Okay, so C is about cash flow. Now, Bryce, I'm going to introduce you to an acronym.
Cool.
It's a new one.
Okay.
It's never been heard before.
Ooh.
It's self-invented.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So he's like, I've kept this one. And this is what to do with, you know, at the moment I've got a big hobby around fintech and, you know, changing people's lives around money management. It's what I do.
Mm.
So I've come up, you know, in terms of, we're developing some products that we're going to release to the community. Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be amazing around money smarts. Oh, it's all exciting stuff. But I've come up with acronym because when you're building this type of stuff, you've got to bring it into, you know, what is it you're trying to do? What does the consumer want? What is the buyer behavior? So it's sake. Are you ready for it?
Is that what the Japanese drink?
No, that's sake.
Okay.
So sake is this. When you're building this type of technology in a modern mobile world, it needs to be S for simplicity,
mm-hmm.
right? It needs to be basically simple to use,
mm-hmm.
okay? So it has to be understandable. A stands for accuracy. No good if you don't have all the information there to be able to collate. You know, people would get frustrated if it's only got 70, 50, 20% of your information and it can't do anything further.
Only as strong as the weakest link, Ben?
Correct. C stands for convenience.
Ooh.
So you need to be able to have it with you at the time that you need it. So like anything in the cloud, it's going to be with you in all your different areas. And we know that through, you know, AI and what's happening in terms of Google Home, Alexa, those types of things with Amazon, those things are going to be really important for the user experience. And finally, the I stands for insights.
Ooh.
You need to be able to give intelligence and outcomes to your user.
Mm.
So everything that we build, obviously, around the services for our community and obviously for our business, we take on those principles around trying to provide technology solutions that are going to complement the professional advisory work that we do. So there you go, mate.
Sacky. I love it, mate.
Okay, so I've been busy over Christmas. Now, let's get back to cash flow. So thinking about Sacky and what the user experience is, we've seen some changes since we, you know, did this podcast many years ago around how people can manage cash flow.
Mm.
There are apps that will help you track your cash flow and give you basic insights in around what your spending and tracking will be. That, and the other big news on cash flow, Bryce, for me, is around open banking.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Morrison came out at a fintech conference I was at last year and talked about mandating and opening up banks' APIs to allow consumers to share their data with businesses, potentially to get accuracy and to get insights.
Mm.
So, you know, we're excited by that. And part of what we're looking to build for our community is around building that out. So what was and what is still difficult and is a science, technology is going to make some assistance in helping us manage cash flow. So, but broadly speaking, cash flow is everything. Isn't it? You know, if we bring it back to the basics, go for it, mate, because I've been doing most of the talking.
Mate, you're on fire. I love it. So, but I got a little text message from the bank the other day and said positive credit reporting is coming in. So make sure that you pay your bills on time and you don't skip a beat. So that was...
some banks.
Shot across the bow just to make sure that people realise that... there won't be any sort of blanket assessments going forward. It'll be individualized assessments. So that's an important thing for people to remember in this cash flow management story.
Yeah, so money management is important. So come back to the fundamentals. What we're talking about here is understanding your flows of money, realizing what surplus you've got, and putting that surplus to work.
Mm.
And if you also think about the power of leverage, and this is sensible leverage, and this moves us into B, into borrowing power.
Ooh.
Effectively, what's going to happen is we need to control a bigger asset than we're getting a better return on, but we need to be able to support that. What we see constantly as a risk for most property investors is they overstretch themselves, not thinking about their cash flow changes into the future.
Mm.
So there's two types of customers out there, Bryce. There's the customer that might be conservative and doesn't put all of their money to use, in the extremes I'm talking here. And so they are robbing themselves, leaving money on the table and opportunity cost if they didn't, like, you know, in other words, if they could comfortably afford a $650,000 property, but they go out and buy a $450,000 property, they're leaving money on the table.
Mm.
You know, I did some analysis on that. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars over a 20, 30 year period. So that's money left on the table.
So I'll give you an analogy for that.
Please.
Bernard Tomic, you know how he didn't qualify for the Australian Open?
Yeah.
He goes, what are you going to do? The reporter says, what are you going to do? He goes, I'm going to go home and count my millions. Mm. Did you see what Andy Roddick replied? But how many millions have you left on the table?
Oh, brilliant.
So, there we go.
Love it. Mm. Love it. So that's the one extreme. The other extreme is the one I was just mentioning earlier, which is the people who overstretch themselves.
Mm.
You know, they're in this rush to get to an outcome, mm. but they haven't thought about having a family. They haven't thought about all the changes. They haven't got their dream home before they start. So they're reversing out. And property is a high value transaction, but it's also very expensive to reverse in and out of. It's illiquid. There's lots of stamp duty and trading costs. So very important to get cash flow management right.
A couple of nuggets to go on top of those, Ben. Budgets alone don't work. Historically, they just don't work. No. They end up in the bottom drawer.
Correct.
And then at the end of the month, we realize what happened. So the systems that you're talking around, Money Smarts,
yep.
are complementing a budget. So budgets alone don't work. We're talking about cash flow first and nothing to do with investing because it comes first.
Yep.
And you've just highlighted that. And the Money Smart system, for those people who aren't currently subscribed to our newsletters that we send out from the Property Couch, you must spend because you've got to go to thepropertycouch.com.au. There's a spot on the homepage. All you need to do is leave a first name and an email address. We don't need mobile numbers. We don't need any of that stuff. Just need your first name and your email address. We'll send you the Money Smart system. You follow it. It has transformed people's lives by just following that Money Smart system. And the idea is... And this is your quote, Ben, but the big rocks, I reckon if we went back over the archive, how many times I've said, I reckon it would be in the millions. And even though I'm delivering it now, I think, how am I going to stop saying the ums? You would say big rocks in the jar, I reckon, yep. a billion times. So big rocks in the jar is important when you're doing this cash flow management stuff.
It's about understanding and scratching the right itches. I was doing a plan for a client just recently, and we were talking about whether they've got their dream home. They love their property, but it's not on the biggest amount of acreage as they want.
Mm.
So we could go off and buy a lot of investment properties and put their money to work. But if they haven't scratched that itch properly, in other words, they want to come back and reverse out of that, it's going to cost them money.
Mm.
So we need to scratch that itch now to make sure that we've really explored it before you make a decision. And this is what happens. This is why planning's so important. There's ultimately scenarios with your life journey. There'll be forks in the road. There'll be decisions that you need to make. So we want to make sure that we run down that rabbit warren, check out what it looks like, see if it's plausible for us, and check two or three scenarios before we make the right decision. Because if we reverse out of that decision, then ultimately there's going to be a cost.
Mm.
You know, there's a time cost, there's an opportunity cost, and there's potentially, you know, potentially red ink on the table
and
in terms of what that looks like.
I like that. You've got to make sure you scratch all the right itches, Ivers. So good advice there. And the four categories of cost spend, you've got your bills and payments, you've got your investment lending, you've got your mortgages and finance, and you've got your fixed provisions.
Yes.
So really they're your four categories, which then...
Nice and simple to run.
Mm.
Before we finish off on cash flow manager, you know, again, I'm right into this tech stuff at the moment. Conversational commerce.
Oh, CCs.
That's where we're going to go.
Mm.
So everything will go to voice into the future. And we talk about Google Assistant, we talk about all these sort of things. So,
how are you going with that? Are you smoking it at home?
Yeah, but it's smoking it.
Yeah.
Loving it. Are you loving it?
Well, mate, I haven't used it as much as you.
The kids?
Yeah.
The kids are using it.
The kids are using it.
Well, we haven't even seen it. It's just warming up, mate. We are, you know, we're at the launch pad in terms of what this looks like. And we're having some really exciting conversations with some people in this space. So I can't wait to, you know, I wish I was middle of the year in terms of being able to announce some pretty exciting stuff. So watch this space, but conversational commerce, that's where we're going. And you'll be able to get more simplicity, accuracy, convenience, and insights
through technology. Sacky, man. I prefer you call it Sacky.
Sacky.
I like it. Simplicity, right. Accuracy, convenience, and insights. I like it.
So let's segue into borrowing power or borrowing, you know, in terms of power, making sure we're putting that surplus money to use. Now, there's two parts to this story. When you're obviously talking about residential property, we're talking about having equity. A lot of people get this wrong. They think, oh, because I've got equity, the banks will lend me the money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you've got to pay it back.
Yeah.
That's where the surplus and the cash flow management comes in. But ultimately, we want to make sure that you borrow appropriately. Now, what's been big big changes in this space since we did this podcast many years ago has been the macro intervention, hasn't it?
Well, can we put some foundations under this?
Let's
put some foundations. So the key thing is, with borrowing power, you need to have a borrowing strategy, not just a borrowing capacity. Because, you know, full disclosure, we've got a mortgage broking business as part of our discipline. People come in and say, what's the best, cheapest rate you can give me? No. Wrong question.
Yeah.
Wrong question.
Would you like $50,000 more or pay an extra $500 in interest?
Correct. Would you like it easier to borrow for the second purchase, or would you like, you know, your hand tied behind your back? So don't talk about price. Don't talk about borrowing capacity. Talk about borrowing strategy. Mm. So that's number one foundation here. And number two for me, you know, people may say this is a bit flavoured, Ben, but I think you should take your advice from an investment savvy mortgage broker, because they are not aligned to one institution. The good ones have access to a large number of institutions, good product knowledge across the range of products. So it's important to lay some foundations here, Ben, because I know where you're about to go.
Yeah, it really is important, because obviously we've had the macro interventions, you know, so in terms of what's happened. So, and, you know, we support, there was too much property investment going on, there was too much lending to investors. We think it's been sensibly managed by both RBA and also by APRA. So congratulations to them. And we think that this is changing in terms of the number of people having multiple properties into the future. We absolutely feel like the agenda is that if mum and dad households could buy three or four properties, I think that's okay.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? If that's taking care of their needs, providing the passive income, and they're no burden on the government purse, I think job well done. I think where it can be excessive and what we've seen in the past is this situation where you could get 10 or 15 by just gearing on gearing and, you know, basically cooking your books and those types of things. Mm. So it's really important to understand that. Now, we've also seen Basel III, which has come out around instructions of how secure the global banking and financial system needs to be. And this is all about provisioning for rainy days and big rainy days events like GFCs. And what's been interesting about that is there's been a flavour coming through those documents around reliance on property generated income, i.e. rents. So usually from a borrowing power point of view, you can add the rent as part of your servicing calculator. So we expect that, you know, there could be some pressure on that. Mm. So some lenders used to do 100%.
Mm.
We're seeing that come down to 80%. Some are down to 60%. So we feel like that is going to even further restrict borrowing power. And we think there could be a little argument here for the banks to sort of tweak investment lending interest rates higher. We don't like it.
Mm.
We think it's especially the irony here is that, you know, when you look at bank loan books, the investor loan book is actually safer than the owner-occupied loan book. More people default on an owner-occupied loan book than an investor. That's what we've heard through our readings.
Aussie John would be licking his lips at the thought of that price disparity.
Well, there's opportunity there. Mm. And I think you will see some new entrants into, especially, you know, niche banking.
Mm-hmm.
Watch this space over the next couple of years if you do see that differential. But what it's also meant is, you know, basically ADIs, which is authorised deposit-taking institutions, respond and are, you know, regulated by APRA, okay? But what we have seen is other means by which you can get your money, you know, so there will be some development in peer-to-peer, there will be some other developments around other types of lending sources where people will be able to source their money. So it's now APRA are aware that people will try and go around the goalposts, try and find another way home, and so they're keeping an eye on that. But this comes back to the investment-savvy mortgage broker around, you know, finding those solutions. Because I've seen customers who it's wrong to go again and they are too aggressive and they don't know, you know, what's going to happen in 2018, 2019. So that's risky for them. But there are absolutely what I would consider very credit-worthy people who should be able to get more money than what maybe the mainstream banks are offering at the moment. And that's that, you know, that's the skill of the mortgage broker. But if you're talking to a mortgage broker and all they're pushing is borrowing more and more and more, come back to point C. come back to cash flow management, come back to you prove to me how I can do that in terms of looking after that.
Because it's important for the listener to know that a mortgage broker gets an upfront commission and a trail commission.
Yes.
And so those upfront commissions are sometimes what might be the agenda that's being driven by the discussion that someone's having. Now, there's lots of mortgage brokers that listen to our podcast, Ben, and there's lots of really good investment savvy mortgage brokers that listen to our podcast. But some of them are chasing their own agenda at the expense of the client. So you're right.
If you
don't know your cash flow, you're in trouble.
And you're going to have a conversation with your mortgage broker around interest only versus P&I.
Mm.
Okay, so really important. Now we've got the little video that I've shot with Joel, one of our property investment advisors here, around the reasons why you may stay interest only over P&I. It is well worth watching in terms of getting your understanding around the opportunity cost of going P&I versus going interest only.
If someone wants to watch that, Ben, we'll put it on the email that we send out, Ivis. So for anyone who has not received the email, you've still got time, quickly go and get it.
Yep, you definitely go and have a look at that because it's important to understand that. Now, again, not for everyone. I stress that, you know, you've got to be reasonably competent in understanding money management to be able to do that type of thing. But there are consequences around future borrowing and controlling more assets if you're going P&I versus interest only.
All right, very good. So there's a bit to digest there, Ben. Episode number 4 was the borrowing power episode.
Oh, yep.
Episode right number 3 was
right back when we didn't know what we were doing. We still don't know what we're doing.
But we bluff a bit more these days. All right, so the next one is asset selection. I guess the fundamental basis here is investment stock versus investment grade.
Yeah.
So for us, we think that the owner-occupied market is the market that you want to be chasing. You say best spend when you say be a price taker, not a price maker. So think about just being strapped on to the coattails of someone that's just running flat out. You just want to be in the slipstream of that. So the invest, and this is for first-time investors, this is hard for them to get their head around. But you, as an investor, you don't want to be in an investment stock. You don't want to buy a property that's tailored to investors, which takes a bit to get your head around. But once you do, you want to be an investor that buys the properties that the majority of the market want. And more importantly, the majority of the market buys without their calculator. They buy it with emotion. They have their heart invested in it. They actually want to do it because of the school, because mum and dad live around the corner, the sister's across the road. There's just no logic in some of these decisions. And there's no logic why they'd pay an extra $20,000 at auction or an extra $50,000. They just got to have it. So as an investor, that's what I mean, getting sucked along on the coattails of the owner-occupier. They're the biggest part of the market, Ben. Mm-hmm. Don't ignore them.
So we've talked about this before. This is probably where we spent most of our time on the podcast because it's all about property investment and getting the best return you possibly can. But we're talking about human interest, human behavior stuff. We're talking about the game of property and the practicality test. We've got videos on that. Again, go to our socials. We'll get that on the newsletter as well so you can revisit all of those things. Because what would be interesting if Labor did get in, and let's say they did get the negative gearing changes passed, you would be hating if you're in investment stock.
Mm.
You would be very, you know, your used car has just lost a fair bit of value because there's just no appetite for it.
Yeah.
So it's really important that you follow the principles of owner-occupier appeal. We've also, you know, in terms of the buyer's decision quadrant lives in there as well. So all of those fundamentals are well told throughout the podcasts. So go back and check out some of those previous episodes and build up your knowledge. Now, if we're moving forward and we take a step back from where we were, I mean, interest rates have played a big role in rising tide lifting all ships, using your words. They've lifted all ships. And what we've seen in the last sort of 2 years is the middle and outer ring suburbs have actually outperformed. On the short-term basis, they've outperformed on a percentage point of view. I still like the idea that my 1 million is now worth 2 million.
Yeah.
But the idea is that even, you know, from a percentage point of view, my $250,000 property is probably now worth $500,000 and seems to be a stronger story, or $600,000 is a greater percentage point. So we've got to be mindful that low interest rates won't be around forever. So even though you might have had that short-term capital growth, you know, be careful. That being said, we've obviously, you know, technology is improving. Research on property, realestate.com.au have got an investor page. There's a lot more information you can gather. Our friends at CoreLogic have some great information, you know, property value, those types of things. They're out there, and we can't forget location score.
Location
you know,
score.
In terms of demand, supply, measuring that in real time and being able to see those short-term opportunities in the market, but also taking that longer-term play. It's about getting that balance right. So you can have something that's going to give you short uplift, but we prefer to play the long game. So it's about seeing the list, you know, that fast 250 that you get on location score, and then cherry picking that out and going doing your field research. Saves you an enormous amount of time and money and effort, but then you get out there and you can basically buy in the right locations.
Very good, Ben. Christmas seems like a long time ago, but I spent some time over there in Perth. And
yes.
It's a good market to apply some of these principles to, because it's a boom bust town, as
yeah.
you know.
Yep.
What I observed is, and in chatting to friends and colleagues and acquaintances over there, that, you know, some of them who didn't follow the fundamentals that we're talking about here in asset selection, and they, you know, they got caught up in the new subdivisions, they've actually been really struggling.
Ouch.
And what I noticed a lot was there was a lot of rental signs around the market.
Vacancy rate is still very high.
But in terms of me going home, I've obviously showcased some of the bluer chip suburbs to Andrea, and it's interesting there's no for rent signs there, and the market, when I did a little bit of digging, the market's done okay. So I did a video just before Christmas Ivis on the top five considerations for Perth, which it's done over 5,000 views, Ben. And
brilliant.
One of the key points there was, in that market, ignore the fundamentals at your peril, because sure, when the mining boom is flying, everything, you know, rising tide lifts all ships.
Mate, you're not one of the best buyer's agents in the country for nothing, are you?
but when the tide goes out, we see who's been swimming naked, Ben. The market sees the most. So, but it's important that owner-occupier appeal, something that's scarce and something that's investment grade, those three filters will serve you very, very well.
So revisit those stories, revisit the practicality test in the game of property investing, and revisit the buyer's decision quadrant. You understand all those types of things, you'll get in the mindset of an elite property investor.
Yep. So A for asset selection, B for borrowing power, C for cash flow management, and D is for the moat around the castle, Ben. You've got to build the moat.
You've got to build the moat.
You've got to do defence. So here's the underlying foundations. You've got to protect your assets.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to protect your income.
Yes.
And you've got to protect your lifestyle. So for most people, the assets are around building insurance, landlord protection insurance.
Yes.
Around your income is, do you have cover for, and we're dancing around the domain of a licensed financial planner here, mm-hmm. so this is just very guide-driven.
Just statements of fact, Bryce.
Statements of fact. But if you were to lose your income, are you protected if you were temporarily to lose your income?
Yep.
But what if you were permanently going to lose your income, therefore affecting your lifestyle? So make sure that you've protected, put some defense around your assets.
Yes.
You put some defense around your income, and you put some defense around your lifestyle, Ben.
Good old risk mitigation, Bryce. We businesses do it. Qantas comes to top of mind. Our great friends at Qantas, they sometimes hedge on oil prices so they can keep the fuel price low. So they do it, you know, in terms of we obviously have currency hedging that goes on. So if the big guys are doing it, we also need to be doing it in our own household. So that risk mitigation does stem from, making sure you've got the landlord protection insurances, that the total and permanent disability in terms of protecting you, especially if there's others involved. You know, one might say, well, if I'm gone or if I'm disabled or whatever and I have to get out of my investment property, that's okay. But when you've got kids, when you've got wives or husbands or something along those lines, it's really important. And I always talk about it like this. Think of it as an asset. Every time you pay the premium, because mine are ridiculous, every time you pay the premium, I'm buying an asset.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm insured for over $1 million, as an example.
Same.
Every time I pay that premium, I've got $1 million. Mm. I'm building my way to $1 million. Now, if I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, Jane has that $1 million.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the premium I'm paying. So it's an asset, and it's an asset technically I never, ever, ever want to call on. And that is insurance. I never really want to call on insurance because something's gone wrong.
Mm.
So whether it's the tenants damaged the property, whether I'm disabled or unable to work anymore, I've been diagnosed. 1 in 3 are going to be diagnosed with a serious illness by the age of, I think it's 65. Mm. So it happens, right? So always make sure that you are protecting yourself. And this leads back into, because they're all, what you're talking about before, four legs on a stool, comes back into the cash flow management. You should be provisioning that in to your cash flow management, because if you look at it in isolation, you do go, oh, gee, that health insurance, oh, gee, that life insurance, oh, gee, that income protection, All of those things do hurt when you look at them in isolation, because it's only human nature. You want to try and cut costs. So, but when you sit back and go, you know what? What happens if something bad goes wrong? I'm okay.
Yep.
And if I've factored it into my global cash flow story, then it's looking good.
I sleep well at night, Ben, knowing that my wife and kids are fine if I'm no longer here. And the fact that we are helping clients get into seven figures worth of debt at peak whilst they're building through the accumulation phase, it just makes good sense for them to have that covered. So,
and a lot of people make the mistake, Bryce, so this is a little tip for the novices. Don't just insure the breadwinner. It's got to be both husband and wife, okay? Because the reality is, if the major
ability to do the breadwinning is largely affected if you've
got to look after kids and look after them. So, I mean, it's happened. My brother has experienced a shocking event. He lost his partner, three boys under 10. You know, I don't wish that on anyone. It's horrible. That's the type of thing that can happen. So just knowing that we could call on some of that money to be able to look after them and, you know, keep him active in work to continue to get that income whilst having support around him, mate, it's a horrible thing to go through, but it happens.
Mm, yeah, no, well said. So I guess we never talk about our business on the podcast, Ben, but what we've done is we've crafted our business in a way that the first point of call that a client has when they talk to us is around cash flow management.
Yep.
And then after cash flow management, they have a choice to whether they do it themselves or get some help, which we then help them structure the borrowing. Then we help them structure which asset to go and find which asset.
Yep.
And then the last piece of the conversation is around that defense. It's not forgotten, but it's not the front, which is slightly different to a traditional financial planning model where they have that discussion at the front. We have it at the end, but we certainly don't forget about it.
Yeah, well, we're very clear that we have a bias towards
residential
property. Mm. And our diversification strategy is borderless investing in terms of part of that story. But whether it's, you know, working with someone who has all of that as a whole of wealth strategy in one firm, or whether it's building your team of experts around you, we've talked about that before. You know, you need specialists around you. Every great business, every great sports club, every great individual sports club have great people around them. Every great person who is successful at what they do will always tell you, I couldn't have done it without the people around me.
Mm.
So once you build that team, you're going to be able to fast track and make less mistakes. Not to say you're not going to make mistakes, not to say that, you know, it's not a perfect world. Investing is not a 100% guarantee, but it's really important to understand it.
Well, it's important for the people who are listening to this podcast, Ben, to know if they want to surround themselves with a team. Clearly, you know, we'll put a hand up, but we've got all of our competitors on this podcast.
Yes.
So they can go and listen to all of our competitors. And I guess...
great businesses who we respect.
Well, I was about to say...
Yes.
To get on this podcast is invitation only by you and I.
Yes.
So we don't take requests. So we go and find the people that we think... And our competitors are on this podcast, but it's because we know that they deliver a really, really good service.
Yeah, it's because we're paying it forward.
So the first time we've said that for this year, Ivis, is we are now been over 600 five-star reviews. It is just an amazing...
Wow,
we read 600. Every single one of them. They fuel us. They give us the energy to keep going forward. So for those of you who have been a long time listener and you haven't had a chance, if you wouldn't mind just dropping us a rating, Ben, ideally five stars.
We've had a couple of fours.
So that's right, people can put whatever they like.
That's it.
But it does help with the algorithm because iTunes don't publish that, but we just know it's a download ratings thing as well as a five-star thing. So if you've got a chance, I know you're trying to wrap me up, I was, because you're in a hurry. My life hack today.
Yes.
Well, quick shout out to the listeners, because I've had a few people send me a couple of insights, which I'm going to release over the next couple of weeks.
Cool.
But I'm an iPhone user, and I don't think anyone who's a long-time listener would be surprised by the fact I'm an iPhone
user.
You're
Apple?
I'm Apple, mate.
You shock me.
So here's the deal. In 2018, let's level the playing field.
Yep.
Because Ivis is a Samsung user, or what do you call
Android?
It? Android.
What do you call it? It's like he washes things out. Android is dead to him.
So let's get some life hacks for Ivis, all right?
Yeah.
Because, Ben, you're an agnostic Apple
user. Yeah, well, I think Google will win the day. That's probably where I need to
so
go into Android.
So a shout-out to the listeners. Can you send me some life hacks on how to use the... what do you call it, Ivis? For you? So we'd love to show you how to do some life hacks on the Samsung or your Androids. But today... QR code, Ben?
Yes.
So on Facebook?
Yeah. Facebook have QR codes?
Facebook have QR
codes. No way. So you don't have to download your own QR code.
Back in the old days where I thought this, so this is now I think QR codes will probably take off.
They will.
Because back in the old days, everyone goes, well, how do I download that thing? And they never do it, right? Because you used to be big on QR codes.
And if people don't understand, that's that little sort of, what looks like
gibberish sort of square
box with all of it. It's like a barcode that's gone mad. It's like
so you go up to a marketing and you like go, click, bang, it sends you straight to the website, gives you all the details, download, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So if you go to the settings on Facebook, Ben, down the very bottom, they have a QR code inbuilt that. Bang.
They have the little menu. It's a little menu bar. Click on that. Go down to QR code.
QR code.
And then click on it. Now Facebook will know what you're looking at. And they'll probably, you know, ping you a few
ads. That's unlike Facebook. That's to want to know a bit more about you. But
it'll happen to Google anyway.
Folks, there it is. So that's actually from the Stig. Stig gave me a little insight into that little life hack today. So not too bad, Stiggy. Thank you for that. So there you go. Mate, did you know?
Did you know? We're sort of moving through pretty
quickly. She just told me it works on Android too.
Very good. Okay, so did you know, Bryce, that Australian advertisers will spend over $16 billion to win our hearts this year? $16
billion. So just on
Valentine's Day? Well, no, it's all around. So branding, the whole bit, $16 billion. Companies will spend $16 billion for your eyeballs and your heart, basically.
I did not know that. $16 billion, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money in which, so businesses like us, we might advertise. That's, you know, we're part of that story.
We are part of that story.
So there you go.
There you go. So folks, did you know's life hacks, tell us what your mindset minute is that you live by, Ben. Any of that, let us know. We want to hear from you. But there you go. Just a few insights from Ben and I on how to master the four pillars to building a property portfolio in 2018.
Love it, mate. And just remember, Bryce, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
Right, turning over new leaf. Didn't even have to ask. Well done. All right, folks. We'll see you next week.